I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
There are, of course, those who do not want us to speak.
Greed, deception, abuse of power, that's no plan.
They keep knowledge, you know, they're total masters of deception. They manipulate everything. You know, these pricks at the hell that lie to us.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody it's a lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
They're setting it up for the Great Deception.
Yeah, I mean, it all revolves around the Great Deception. Right?
Yeah, bingo. And L.A. and I talked about that. I said, L.A., is this the Great Deception? And he didn't hesitate. He said, absolutely.
I never used to question before, and now I question everything.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
And welcome to the Great Deception Podcast. I'm your host, Matt. Thanks for joining me. Guys, I want to just start by a quick apology to my buddies over at the Mind's Eye. I've been battling a cold for 2+ weeks now. I finally went to the doctor, found out I have walking pneumonia. So I was supposed to do a show with them last night, one of their live streams. I couldn't do it. Just battling that and sinusitis at the same time. So there's points where I just want to rip my face off. But it's good. I got on the mend and things are getting better. But the other thing that's come with it is brain fog. So I know I've been talking about this Rulers of Evil series I want to put out, and guys, I just haven't been able to focus enough to really get it done. But in the meantime, I've been looking at one of the older subjects, and it has a new flair to it with some new news, and that's Ukraine. And I kind of want to go through a quick overview of that and some interesting things now and some things that people might not understand that aren't as deep into it as many are. But first, guys, a great way to support the show: you can go to patreon.com/thegreatdeceptionpodcast. You can go sign up there. We have a bunch of different tiers. All the Monday Night Master Debater videos. I have a ton of books out there. I'm starting to put other documentaries from some other guys, creators that I find really interesting out there too. So go check that out. And then the other way, leave reviews. Like we have one here, a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Love the Great Deception Podcast, especially the Monday Night Master Debaters. Matt is full of common sense and has a great point of view of this crazy world. His voice is smooth as silk, too. Well, I thank you, Keen. I appreciate that. And guys, it's very simple. These reviews help the show get in the algorithm, help more people be able to find the show. And if you think it's valid and important information that we're delivering here, please, by all means, share, leave a review, tell your friends about it, whatever. And I really do, guys, I appreciate all of these reviews that are left. So it's one of those where, you know, we don't get a whole lot of stuff that we get to review all the time. So we're going to review, when any reviews I get, I will leave that out there for you. So what kind of started this, you know, obviously Ukraine's been going on since 2022. What really perked this? Well, there was two things. Back at the end of February, there was an article in the New York Times called "The Spy War: How the CIA Secretly Helps Ukraine Fight Putin." And any of you that know anything know that there are supposedly no troops involved, U.S. troops involved in Ukraine. But when you start digging into it, there's a lot of CIA action going on in there, as expected, right? This is how they operate. They overrun governments, they infiltrate, and then when it's no longer useful, they discard it. Well, Ukraine is a useful idiot right now. It is a meat grinder. It is reprehensible, really, what's going on over there. I mean, it's sad. And why? For the war hawks. That's it, right? They keep telling you, well, you know, because obviously the initial reason was to bring down Russia, right? The West wanted to castrate Russia in a sense and bring them after the West got out of their 20-year prolonged wars of terror, unsuccessfully, I might add. They needed to inflict the pain on somebody else. So Russia, why not them? They're always a good boogeyman. So what they decided is they're going to create a Vietnam-type situation for Russia in Ukraine. And, you know, it seemed to be very, you know, the Western media will make you believe it's altruistic and that, you know, this is a fight for democracy. And this couldn't be further from the truth. There is no democracy going on in Ukraine. And I will show you just the opposite. There is censorship of media. There is arrests. There is killing of journalists, American journalists, might I add, that are covering this. There's rampant corruption. There's Nazis, actual Nazis, not the ones that the left like to, you know, label MAGA supporters as. These are real Nazis. Okay. And, oh, not to mention biolabs that are in Ukraine as well. So what you have to understand is since the fall of the Soviet Union back in the 90s, and even before that, Ukraine's always been a hotbed, right? It's been one of the southernmost republics of the Soviet Union, the old Soviet Union. And so when it broke up in 1994, you had a lot of chaos going on, and there were a lot of parts moving around. Well, okay, so if we go back there, what do we have back then? We have what's called the Budapest Memorandum, which is basically an extension of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So, like I said, you have the Soviet Union breaking up. So, the states that want to form around it, one of them being Ukraine, were not going to be part of Russia anymore. They were going to be an independent nation. Well, this was a problem because a lot of these, you know, they called them satellite states, had nuclear weapons. So that was a major problem for the, you know, one, for the uncertainty of these states to have these quote unquote nuclear weapons was a threat to the world peace. And Russia didn't like the idea either of Ukraine being independent and having nuclear weapons right on its doorstep. And, you know, you could say they knew what was coming down the road eventually. It was just a matter of when. And that was the West trying to dig their claws into the Ukraine. And the Ukraine, it's significant for many reasons. But in this, along with this memorandum, and actually here, let me play a clip from, and guys, believe me, I don't like this guy as much as the rest.
Putin every day.
But Robert F. Kennedy, listen, on Ukraine, he's been spot on. On COVID, he's been spot on. On Gaza, he couldn't be more wrong. But let's listen to what he says about the little background as to what led to this conflict.
As I want to settle the war, let's negotiate. And Zelensky has said we're not going to negotiate. But 92, the wall came down in the Soviet Union. Gorbachev said, I'm going to allow you to reunify Germany, but I want your commitment. After that, you will not move NATO one inch to the east. And we solemnly swore we wouldn't do it. Well, then in 97, we're going to move NATO 1,000 miles to the east and take 15 countries into it and surround the Soviet Union. We then overthrow the government. in 2014, their elected government, and put in a Western sympathetic government. Russia then has to go into Crimea because they have a port at Vladivostok. It's their only warm water port. And they know the new government that we just installed is going to invite the U.S. Navy into their port. So then the Russians go in. They only send 40,000 people. It's a nation of 44 million people. They clearly do not intend to conquer Ukraine. But they want us back at the negotiating table. The Russians just want a guarantee that Ukraine won't join NATO. Zelensky signs the treaty. Putin's people sign the treaty. And Putin starts withdrawing the Russian troops in good faith. And what happens? Joe Biden sends Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister, over to Ukraine in April and forces him to tear up the treaty. And since then, 450,000 kids have died who none of them should.
Okay, so you heard it right there, right? That's a little bit of the backdrop to this, is that when the Soviet Union fell, there was an agreement that NATO would not move east towards Russia. Well, what happened? Since then, they've moved all along Russia's border, with the remaining holdout being Ukraine. And that's been Russia's line in the sand, is Ukraine cannot join NATO. And what do these psychopaths on the east, on the Western government say, especially the United States? Ukraine will be a part of NATO eventually. We will make it happen, right? Which is just provoking, and it's just nonsense. So we go from that, and we're going to fast forward to 2014, because this is where the West really steps in and overthrows the government. I mean, this is what they do. And how do they do it? They don't do it with troops. They do it with the CIA. They do it with conjunction with George Soros in what's called a color revolution. Okay. But what's significant is this New York Times piece that came out a week or two ago, end of February, that solidified the fact that the United States has had 12 secret bases, CIA bases, in Ukraine they started them in 2014, just coincidentally when this revolution starts happening. Okay. And this is based on over 200 interviews with current and former officials in Ukraine to verify that these are legitimate CIA bases. Okay, so it says the New York Times reports that before the full-scale war, the Ukrainians themselves proved themselves to the Americans by collecting intercepted data that helped to prove Russia's involvement in the downing of Malaysia Airlines jetliner in 2014. They also, which I find this interesting, helped Americans prosecute Russian agents who interfered in the 2016 presidential election. So they're still holding on to that nonsense of election interference by the Russians to get Trump into office. Okay, but then around 2016, the CIA began training elite Ukrainian Special Forces unit known as 2245, which captured Russian drones and communications equipment so that the CIA technicians could reverse engineer them and crack Moscow's encryption systems. According to New York Times, one of the officers in this unit, it was the current head of the defense intelligence, Budinov. So the CIA also helped train a new generation of Ukrainian spies who worked in Russia, throughout Europe, and in Cuba and other places where Russians have a significant presence. Okay. So they say now these intelligence networks are more important than ever, as Russia is on the offensive and Ukraine is more dependent on sabotage and long-range missile strikes that require spies far behind enemy lines. And they are increasingly at risk. If Republicans in Congress end funding to Kyiv, the CIA may have to scale back. To try to reassure Ukrainian leaders, William J. Burns, the CIA director, made a secret visit to Ukraine end of February, his 10th visit since the invasion. So you don't think the CIA is invested in this, but the CIA director has made 10 trips to Ukraine since the invasion. But we're not involved in this. We're just giving them money and support, right? New York Times reports that a partnership between the CIA and the Defense Intelligence of Ukraine began in February of 2014, when former President Viktor Yanukovych fled to Russia. Why did he flee? Because there was a coup taking place. This cooperation proposed by Valentin Nalivachenko, who became the head of security service of Ukraine. Very interesting how these people ended up with these positions. U.S. rules prohibit intelligence agencies from providing Ukraine any support that could be reasonably expected to have lethal consequences. However, the red lines were never precisely clear, creating constant tension in the partnership. Okay, so then in Kiev, Nalivaychenko picked a longtime aide, Valery Kondrychuk, to head the DIU, and they created a new paramilitary unit that was deployed behind the Russian aggressor's line to conduct operations and gather intelligence that the CIA and MI6 could not provide. Another incident that occurred when Budanov's group entered Crimea in 2016, or after an incident, the Americans became very angry and threatened to close the program down. After that, the then head CIA, John Brennan, called Kondrychuk to re-emphasize the red lines. The general was upset. "It's our war and we've got to fight," he said. Okay, so Washington is basically handcuffing these people and wants them to fight the way they want to fight. So then it goes on to say that the New York Times notes that under Donald Trump's presidency, the CIA and DIU's cooperation expanded to include more specialized training programs and the construction of additional secret bases. The relationship was so successful, the CIA wanted to replicate it with other European intelligence services that share common interests to counter Russia. Okay, so you're seeing it right here. It's just, it's so in your face. And then it says, starting in November 2021, the CIA and MI6 sent messages to their Ukrainian counterparts that Russia was preparing for a full-scale invasion to decapitate the government and install a puppet in Kiev who would do the Kremlin's bidding. The intelligence listed the names of the Ukrainian officials whom the Russians planned to kill or capture, as well as Ukrainians whom the Kremlin hoped to put in power. President Volodymyr Zelensky and some of his top advisors appear unconvinced, even after CIA Director William Burns traveled to Kiev in January 22 to brief them. As the Russian invasion approached, CIA and MI6 officers made final visits to Kiev with their Ukrainian counterparts. One of the MI6 officers teared up in front of the Ukrainians, fearing the Russians would kill them. Okay, so it says, at this time, the old handcuffs are off and the Biden White House authorized spy agencies to provide intelligence support for lethal operations against Russian forces on Ukrainian soil. So, and this is a good article. If you can get your hands on it, it's tough to find. I'll try and put the link in the show notes because it's New York Times and you have to pay. Somehow through this Reddit post, I was able to get the article for free. But it is. It goes into great detail about how the CIA, you know, is fully engaged in this war. And as this article says right here, the CIA is in Ukraine. Why is it not seen as provocation? Okay, because it's obvious they are doing everything they can to fight. And one of the other interesting things that we've seen recently is you've seen British troops are on the ground. British NATO troops are on the ground supporting Ukraine. And there was a video I saw the other day of incoming missile fire, and this guy's digging a foxhole, and he's a British soldier digging a foxhole, and he's got Ukraine patches all over him. So we know this is going on. We know this is a proxy war by the West. And, you know, it started that way. It's been planned that way. And how did this whole thing come about, right? Well, we're going to have to go back to 2014, okay? And we go back to 2014, and I'm going to play this clip right here from an Oliver Stone piece that's a pretty good, gives you a pretty good overview of what goes on.
Did you see any evidence of U.S. involvement? Did you feel their presence from the U.S.?
Очень частыми гостями были представители Соединенных Штатов, конгрессмены, были госпожа Нуланд приезжала очень часто у нас.
So what he said was, and I'll just, U.S. representatives, congressmen were frequent guests at that time. Mrs. Nuland, Victoria Nuland, visited on numerous occasions, and we had discussed state affairs with her. He goes on to say, but after she went to Maidan and supported the protesters and accused police of abuse of power. Okay, so she's now, we all saw the message on Maidan that they were putting this together, right? Okay, so now we'll go back to the doc.
And back here on this square,
this is Christopher Murphy. Okay, Christopher Murphy alongside Nazis at the revolution in 2014.
Well, members of Congress were visiting Ukraine during that period, most famously Congressman John McCain. So some of the people who were challenging their government, their elected government at that point, were being told by a senior U.S. official, a person who ran for president and a top official in the U.S. Congress, that the U.S. was with them.
I'm Senator John McCain, and it's always a pleasure to be back in Ukraine.
Senator McCain was, in a sense, giving the people in the Maidan are feeling that they had the backing of the most powerful country on earth.
This is about the future you want for your country. This is about the future you deserve.
Делегаций много приезжало. Я говорил, что нельзя нельзя говорить, во-первых, неправду. Нельзя.
Okay, so he's saying many delegations were coming over, and I told them that, first of all, they shouldn't have lied. They shouldn't have taken protesters' side and protected only their rights.
Становиться на сторону митингующих и отстаивать их права, создавая,
creating and deepening the conflict.
Когда митингующие захватывают правительственные здания,
are the protesters allowed to seize governmental buildings in any other country?
Другой стране, например, чтобы посол Украины.
Can a Ukrainian ambassador come to the protesters in Ferguson and hand around donuts and accuse the police officers?
It is believable.
I believe, hold on, let's go back. I believe it is unacceptable in any European country as well. So why was Ukraine treated like that?
Contact with the U.S. government in this period.
My high-level contact was Vice President Biden. We had frequent phone conversations. But the problem was that Mr. Biden said one thing, but they did different things. Okay, so now they're getting into Ambassador Jeffrey Pyatt, and we'll hear him on a phone call coming up. The ambassador received visits from Maidan representatives all the time, talking of Jeffrey Pyatt. We knew it well. We kept track of it. We got the impression that the headquarters in charge of the whole process was in the U.S. embassy. So the coup was coming from the U.S. embassy. It was being led by the U.S.
In early February of 2014, as the Maidan crisis was getting more violent, there was a phone call that was intercepted. It was a call between the Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, Victoria Nuland, and the U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt.
Questions of credibility are being raised after a private chat between two top U.S. diplomats was leaked online.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Klitsch and Tony Book on the outside. I just think Klitsch going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay. Good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
Sullivan's come back to me VFR saying you need Biden, and I said probably tomorrow for an attaboy and to get the deets to stick. So okay. Biden's willing.
So you had this.
Okay, so Biden's willing. Now, who are they talking about? Yatsenyuk is the guy who will eventually take over as prime minister, president, whatever. And he is replacing Poroshenko. Now, what caused all this was Poroshenko was going to have Ukraine join the EU. And then at the last minute, he changed his mind and decided to go with the Russian offer against the EU. Once this happened, now the U.S. stepped in with the West and said, we can't have that. So now they're looking at who can we put in that will be a good puppet for us. And they're saying Klitschko. Now, some of you will remember Vladimir Klitschko, who is a boxer, heavyweight champ, who they end up giving the mayorship of Kiev to as kind of to pacify him. And then the other guy they're talking about, Tannybrook, is a full-fledged anti-Semitic neo-Nazi. I mean, this guy is just straight up part of this, you know, upside down world. And that's who McCain and them keep meeting with, these guys. All right. So these guys are not good guys.
Remarkable phone call where you have these two senior officials of the U.S. government apparently talking about a coup or how they were planning to restructure the government of Ukraine.
Okay. So not only was, you know, did they discuss it openly right there, but listen to John Kerry talk about it.
I will tell you, because as Secretary of State, I was deeply involved in this. All of us in the administration were trying to get rid of that prosecutor. From Obama to the Secretary of State to the Vice President, all of us were working on that. The ambassador, and we knew if Ukraine was going to survive and win the revolution in the end, the Maidan, they had to get rid of that prosecutor, and they did.
The prosecutor. Now, that sounds familiar, right? Why does that sound familiar? Because good old Joe told us about this. Remember what quid pro quo? That was the big thing in the Trump impeachment. They were impeaching him for quid pro quo. That was that he wasn't going to give Ukraine the money or the weapons that had been promised by the Obama administration unless Zelensky would give him information about the servers, the DNC, you know, servers that were supposedly based out of Ukraine. He wanted some more information on that. And they impeached him for that. That the whole Ukraine impeachment shamble was just a dog and pony show, deflecting from what the previous administration led by Biden had done. Biden was the big dog in this. He was the one who was going to help. And this prosecutor, okay, so what was the prosecutor investigating? He was investigating a company called Burisma. Now, what's Burisma? Burisma is a natural gas company that saw the writing on the wall they had been friendly with the Poroshenko, the previous administration. They saw that, oh man, we could be in trouble here with this new administration. How do we make sure we're safe? Well, what did they do? They hired Hunter Biden, who has zero experience, as a, what would you call it? I mean, he was like a board director, but he was more of like a liaison, right? They paid him $50,000 a month to sit on this board of Burisma. And basically what that was payoff money. And some of it went to, quote unquote, the big guy. And we all know who the big guy is. That's Joe. And so it was to protect them and keep them safe and let them keep doing business in this new administration that the U.S. had orchestrated through the coup. So now this is Biden telling you that he got this prosecutor fired right here. Clear as day. Listen up.
I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference, said, no, I said, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours. I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
Son of a bitch. And they put in someone who was solid. I love that term. Okay. Now, let's listen to Victoria Nuland talk about picking the Ukrainian government.
She got caught on tape. The top official in the State Department in charge of Ukraine, Victoria Nuland, who's still running Ukraine for the United States under the Biden administration, picking the Ukrainian leader. It had nothing to do with any democratic processes in Ukraine. The Ukrainians had already chosen their president. That was the president who won a five-year term in 2010 and was supposed to serve until 2015. Remember, when they tell you that Ukraine is a democracy, we're there to protect, is how the actual leaders of Ukraine are selected.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tony Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know. I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay.
What a weird democracy, isn't it? Where Victoria Nuland and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine picked the leader of the country. By the way, that plan they laid out, the one Victoria Nuland endorsed, ended up being exactly how the Ukrainian leaders were chosen.
Funny how that happens, right? And that's that clip we listened to. Now, this is her. This is going back. And this is another conversation she had with him about the EU.
Official talking about diplomatic efforts in Ukraine, the last thing you want to do is drop your guard.
So that would be great, I think, to help glue this thing and have the UN help glue it and, you know, the EU.
But that is exactly what reportedly happened between US Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and US Ambassador to Ukraine Jeffrey Pyatt. The exchange has since surfaced online, including the crude swipe at the European Union. The audio clip of a woman and man, said to be Nuland and Pyatt, hears them discussing strategies to work with the three main opposition.
And we've heard that ad nauseum now, okay? We've heard what they have to say over and over again. Now, there's one more clip I do want to play here from Ukraine on Fire, which if you haven't seen that, I believe it's on my Patreon page. Great documentary on the conflict in 2014. So let's take a look.
Listen. Early February of 2014, as the Maidan crisis was getting more violent, there was a phone call that was intercepted. It was a call between the Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, Victoria Nuland, and the U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt.
Questions of credibility are being raised after a private chat between two top U.S. diplomats.
Change the strategic dynamic in Eastern Europe. The neocons are very smart people, and they've been at this for a long time. They came in around the issue of propaganda. They studied how to create hot buttons for the American people. They had this experience when they were getting the American people to get excited about Central America back in the 1980s.
Sandinista regular army, the ground force is being equipped now with Russian artillery.
And they've been applying those same strategies ever since. They remain very dedicated to achieving their goals. They still want to get rid of certain governments. They wanted a regime change in Syria, for instance, regime change in Iran. They're very skilled at this, and they have a lot of allies now inside the news media, inside the government, and that means that they can do a lot to control the narrative of any story.
You don't say. They would never control the narrative. Like the narrative of this story, because this is all about democracy, right? That's what we've been told, that the fight for Ukraine is a fight for democracy, for our democracy too. Well, now, one of the things that I have a major problem with, if this is such a democracy, is Why is there so much Nazi presence in Ukraine, right? And we're looking at stories, guys. This isn't new. There's stories from 2014. Okay, and actually, here, let's show you the headlines, okay? 2014. Here we go. Azov fighters are Ukraine's greatest weapon and maybe its greatest threat. The battalion's far-right volunteers desire to bring the fight to Kiev is a danger to post-conflict stability. And why is that? Because they're Nazis. And part of the battle of this is, you know, Sam Winchester over at According to Sam just did a great podcast a week or two ago called Freedom Fighters. And it's about this, like, who are the freedom fighters in Ukraine? Who's really fighting for freedom? Well, if you look at it, when this happened in 2014, this is all of a sudden when this Azov battalion, who is known for Nazi insignias, very, you know, Nazi-like, very anti-Semitic, very, you know, Nazi qualities in them. And so this, they just so happened to form in 2014 as this whole coup revolution is happening. Very coincidental, right? But they're not the only ones. There's also the Svoboda group. It's another Nazi group. And the biggest one out of them all is the Right Sector. Okay. And they're another group. And here, I'll show you. Here's another headline from 2017. This is, who are Ukraine's far-right Azov regiment? The far-right neo-Nazi group has expanded to become part of Ukraine's armed forces, a street militia, and a political party. Okay, and one more headline. Ukraine's Nazi problem is real, even if Putin's denazification claims isn't. No, not acknowledging the threat means that little is being done to guard against it. Okay, this is, it's right there. It's so bad. And I love how, you know, Jimmy Dore Show jokes about this all the time. John Stewart gave a medal to a Nazi at Disney World. He pinned a medal on a literal Nazi at Disney World at the beginning of all this nonsense, right? And this is the hype train that they're pushing, that these Nazis are the good guys, okay? Now, what happened in 2014 is Ukraine wasn't a clean split. You had areas, states, so to speak, that wanted to stay with Russia. They didn't want to go with this new Western government. They saw what was going to happen, the rampant corruption. They saw the neo-Nazi ideologies, these far-right ideologies that were being pushed, and they didn't want it. So they seceded, and they wanted to stay with Russia. They seceded from Ukraine, and that was Odessa, that was Donbass region, and it was Crimea. And what did they do? Oh, okay. Let's see here. May 2014, what happens from the Right Sector? 48 people were burned alive, 40 men, 7 women, and a boy in the Odessa massacre. Some 1,000 Ukrainian fascists led by the notorious Right Sector surrounded, stormed, and burned the House of Trade Unions in Odessa on May 2, 2014. So these are the good guys, right? These are the guys that we're sending billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to. Okay. And this is, so this article from 2017, as the Trump administration mulls sending weapons to Ukraine, again, why he was impeached, because he didn't send those weapons. The question of far-right forces employed by the Kiev government has returned to the forefront. Some Western observers claim that there are no neo-Nazi elements in Ukraine, chalking that assertion to propaganda from Moscow. Unfortunately, they are sadly mistaken. There are indeed neo-Nazi formations in Ukraine. This has been overwhelmingly confirmed by nearly every major Western outlet. The fact that analysts are able to dismiss it as propaganda disseminated by Moscow is profoundly disturbing. It is especially disturbing considering the current stage of neo-Nazis and white supremacists across the globe, right? I mean, it's the biggest problem in America, according to the president. As damn white supremacists are just everywhere. The most infamous neo-Nazi group in Ukraine is the 3,000-strong Azov Battalion, founded in 2014. Prior to creating Azov, its commander, Andrei Belitsky, headed the neo-Nazi group Patriot of Ukraine, members of which went on to form the core of Azov. Belitsky had stated that the mission of Ukraine is to lead the white races of the world in a final crusade for their survival against the Semite-led Untermenschen. Guys, What else do you need to hear, right? That's what we're supporting. We are sending billions of dollars to help lead the white races of the world in a final crusade for their survival. What? Like, this is what's going on. Azov's logo is composed of two emblems, the Wolf's Angel and the Sonnenrad, identified as neo-Nazi symbols by the Anti-Defamation League. The Wolf's Angel is used by the U.S. hate group Aryan Nations, while the Sonnenrad was among the neo-Nazi symbols at this summer's deadly march in Charlottesville, right? Okay, so this is what's going on. They tell you it's Russian propaganda, okay? This is a CNN article from March of 2022. A far-right battalion has a key role in Ukraine's resistance. Its neo-Nazi history has been exploited by Putin. And this is what they're trying to tell you, that this is Russian propaganda. But it's not. It's been proven over and over again, and to the point where at one point Congress didn't want to send any funds over to Ukraine because of this neo-Nazi issue. All right, here's another New York Times on Ukraine's Nazi imagery. It's complicated. The New York Times continued its line of downplaying or even celebrating the Nazis in Ukraine with its piece in June of 23 that sought to explain away the frequency of Nazi symbols and photographs of the Ukrainian military. The Times commented that such imagery put Western journalists in a difficult position, noting that the Ukrainian press officer said journalists had asked Ukrainian soldiers to remove the Nazi insignia before being photographed. The headline read, "Nazi symbols on Ukraine's front line highlight thorny issues of history." The chief concern of the Times was the worry that Nazism in Ukraine risks fueling Russian propaganda. Okay, it's not propaganda. They changed the headline. Nazi symbols on the front lines. What else do we need to know? This is not good, okay? So look at these logos here. As the Azov Battalion became Ukraine's Azov Regiment, it preserved the insignias of the Nazis' SS Wolf Angel symbol. Okay? Very clear here, guys. Here's an article from 2014. Says seven decades of Nazi collaboration, America's dirty little Ukraine secret. Okay, it's over and over and over again. All right, that we see the Nazis in Ukraine. And so that gets us to an interesting point. What are we supporting over there? What is going on over there? We've already talked about the 14 CIA facilities that are over there that are working with Ukrainian intelligence and MI6 against Russia. But what else did we have over there? Oh, we have biolabs, or had biolabs over in Ukraine. This is from 2022. Okay, and the U.S. denied it. I got a ban on Instagram for talking about the biolabs in Ukraine. And the Pentagon came out in 2022 and said it has operated 46 biolabs in Ukraine handling dangerous pathogens. Okay, now, are these all high-end biolabs? No, some are medical facilities, other things like that. It's not 46 biolabs. But there definitely were biolabs handling dangerous pathogens. Okay, China has joined calls for the United States to explain the role and capacity of the laboratories following the Pentagon's stunning reversal of months of denial. In March, leaked papers appeared to suggest that operations in Ukraine were sensitive, while Kiev was reportedly blocked from public disclosure about the program. According to a document signed between the two nations, Ukraine is obliged to transfer the dangerous pathogens to U.S. Department of Defense for biological research. So they're there, right? Those who had raised concerns over the presence of the biolabs have been dismissed as conspiracy theorists and accused of regurgitating Russian disinformation. How many times have we been accused of regurgitating Russian disinformation when in fact they are facts and they are deflections off what the administration is doing, right? The whole Trump collusion was to cover up what Hillary did with Uranium One. The Clinton campaign paid for all of that nonsense in the Trump-Russia collusion thing, all of which turned out to be bullshit. None of it was true. None of it. Because if it was, they would have nailed him for it. You know that. They were trying to get him for anything. There was nothing there. It was a giant nothing burger created by Hillary and her whatever followers. Okay. But the comments made by the U.S. Secretary of State, Victoria Nuland, in March prompted further suspicions when she appeared to confirm the biological program, saying she feared the labs would fall into Russian hands. And we will, where is it? Where is Nuland? All right, let's hear right from her mouth.
Does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
I'm sure you're aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting out there all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by the Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a biological or chemical weapon incident or attack inside of Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it?
There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, and it is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves.
Classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're doing themselves. This is exactly what our government and our three-letter agencies have done for the last, I don't know, 60, 70 years, if not, you know, government even longer. I mean, we can keep going on that. It's all deflection. This is a bunch of bullshit. We had biolabs there. And they wouldn't admit it. They denied it for months. They censored us. But there were biolabs straight from the horse's mouth. And what I find even more disgusting is the honorable Victoria Nuland they have on her sign. There's nothing honorable about that pig. Nothing. Okay, so I stress time and time again, the U.S. conducts more biomilitary activities than any other country in the world. Moreover, the U.S. is the only country opposing the establishment of verification mechanisms with the BWC, which is the Biological Weapons Convention. The international community has had long concerns over this. Recently, Russia has further revealed the U.S.'s biomilitary activities in Ukraine and raised clearly that the U.S. has violated the BWC. According to the stipulations of the BWC, the U.S. is under obligation to provide clarification on Russia's allegations so as to restore the international community's confidence in the U.S.'s compliance, which they did not do. Okay, they just said, oh, we're afraid that these will get in the hands of Russia and then they'll use it on... No, it's nonsense. Okay? It's... So, there's the biolabs. That was 2022 also. Now, what else do we have in 2022? Well, there before the invasion happened... I'm sure some of you remember this, but before the invasion happened, our fearless leader, Mr. Slow Biden, said this threat to the world and to Russia specifically and kind of to Germany because it's German property, but let's listen.
Let me answer the first question first. If Germany, if Russia invades, that means... tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
Hold on. What was that?
Nord Stream 2. We There will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
I promise you. Right? I promise you we'll be able to do it. Okay, now this was prior to it happening. Then, sure enough, what happens in September of 2022, just, 6 months after Russia invades Ukraine? The Nord Stream pipeline explodes. Two of the 23 gas pipelines between Europe and Russia. Both pipelines were built to transport natural gas from Russia to Germany through the Baltic Sea. And the majority owned by the Russia's majority state-owned gas company, Gazprom. Prior to the leaks, the pipelines were filled with natural gas, but were not transporting it as a consequence of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Okay, an explosion was detected originating from Nord Stream 2. A pressure drop in one of its pipes was reported, and natural gas began escaping to the surface of the Danish Islands. Okay, so they intentionally blew it up. There's just no coincidence here. Guys, they intentionally blew up this pipeline. And then claimed, we didn't do it. It was Russia that blew up their own pipeline. Right? What did she just say? They do things and then they blame it on the other person. And that's what we do. Not we, the United States government. I am not a part of the United States government. I do not support the United States government. They are the most corrupt terrorists in the world. Along with, we'll throw good old MI6 in there in England. We can throw the Mossad in there and our Israeli counterparts. They're all the biggest terrorists in this world. Okay, and they're the ones who cause all this shit. And then they say, oh yeah, it was Russia that blew up their own pipeline. How comical is that? Come on. Now, let's talk democracy, because that seems to be a huge, huge issue at stake, right? The democracy, that's what we always hear about. Let's get something straight. There is nothing democratic about Ukraine. Nothing. And over again, we're going to see Zelensky crushing dissent, regulating the media, consolidating news media, killing American journalists reporting on the war, and just rampant and blatant corruption. Okay, so now I want to give you guys, because I didn't believe this until I heard it myself, but listen who is calling Ukraine corrupt. One of the most corrupt sons of bitches on the face of this earth. Listen up.
Stunningly came out and admitted how corrupt Ukraine is.
Ukrainian government is one of the worst in the world. Mm. And, you know, corrupt, controlled by a few rich people. I mean, really unfortunate for the people in Ukraine.
Holy smokes, that's Bill Gates saying that. And you know what kind of an opinion we have of Bill Gates on this show. I bet Ukraine didn't like those comments.
Bill Gates. Okay, when Bill Gates is calling you one of the most corrupt, okay, there is something wrong. Now let's listen to a little bit more on the corruption, then we're going to dig into it a little bit.
I don't know if you saw this, you probably did, that Zelensky fired a bunch of his cabinet officials over corruption. And it was like, they were taking these fancy vacations to Europe. One of them was accused of basically overcharging the military for meals. And remember, I mean, the amount that we have sent to Ukraine, propping up not only their military, but their government, their economy, etc. When they're taking that money, that's like coming directly out of the U.S. taxpayer pocket. And nobody reported on any of this until Zelensky fired people. And then we were allowed to be like, yeah, there's some problems with corruption there, maybe a little bit. Maybe we should like worry a little bit about where the weapons are going and what exactly is happening there. But before then, you weren't allowed to say it.
Even better, the Times actually changed his headline. They were like, Ukraine goes corruption drive. And it was like, Zelensky aims to stamp out corruption, just to make it a little bit less like the appearance. I have some fun numbers for everybody. This is from a past monologue I've gone. U.S. aid currently at $100 billion is double what the entire rest of the world has given to Ukraine. In 1 year, surpasses what we gave the Afghan military in 20 years. The total amount to Ukraine now exceeds all U.S. military aid to the country of South Vietnam between 1956 and 1975.
Wow.
$100 billion.
So who is this bankrupting? Russia, right? This was supposed to destroy the Russian economy. It's destroying America, is what it's doing. We've given $100 billion. That's more than 20 years of war in Afghanistan, which is insane to begin with. Like, the fact that we were there for 20 years, the fact that we spent that much money there is insane. But then to know that in 1 year in Ukraine, we spent that much. There's something more to this. Now, what is it? It's the corruption, guys. It's the flat out corruption. Okay, let's listen to Time Magazine talk about this, because they did a piece.
So Time Magazine just put out an article detailing the corruption in Ukraine and how Zelensky has lost the plot, which I find interesting because less than a year ago, Time Magazine was calling him Person of the Year. So top Ukrainian officials told Time Magazine that people are stealing like there's no tomorrow, which is concerning to me because we've sent billions over there. Joe Biden wants us to approve another $61.4 billion to go to Ukraine, and they're the second most corrupt country in all of Europe. When top Ukrainian officials are telling Time Magazine that people are stealing like there's no tomorrow, don't you think Joe Biden should say, you know what, let's take a break from sending billions of dollars? Also in the article, Zelensky's top advisors say that he has deluded himself, he's out of touch, they're out of options, they're not winning, but try telling him that, end quotes. In the article, they also say that Zelensky is concerned that people are focusing more on Israel and Palestine and all these other issues, and that they've moved on from Ukraine. A few months ago, it was 55%, now it's 59%. Of Americans do not want to send additional aid to Ukraine, and the numbers keep on going up. The sentiment for the Ukraine war is going down. Here's what I would like to know. If top Ukrainian officials are saying that they're corrupt, people are stealing money, that they're out of options, that Zelensky has lost the plot, why don't we redirect our focus to all of the issues we have here in the United States? I know it doesn't get enough airtime, but we have a major crisis at the southern border, and the fact of the matter is, Joe Biden has shown he's more concerned with Ukraine's border than our own. I don't think it will, but this Time Magazine article should be a major wake-up call to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, because they say Ukraine is still a major top priority for the United States. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's polling is going down, sentiment for the Ukraine war is going down, and also there's a major article detailing corruption in Ukraine. So if that's not enough, I don't know what is. All right, thank you guys for liking and following. Drop a comment and tell me how you feel about this.
There you go, right? Time Magazine, from Time Magazine's Person of the Year to being called out for his corruption and disconnect from reality. Okay, now let's look at corruption in the Ukrainian polls themselves, okay? This is from the Ukrainians.
According to a recent poll, about 78% of Ukrainians believe that Zelensky is directly responsible for corruption in the government and regional administrations. Corruption was named the most significant obstacle to development after Russia's war in the country. In another survey, 55% of Ukrainians said that Kyiv's allies should provide the country with military aid only under the condition of an effective fight against corruption.
There you go. 78% of Ukrainians think there's corruption and Zelensky's in charge of it. Okay, now let's... What's so corrupt?
They stole billions of dollars from the United States and are now demanding that we give them even more money. The Pentagon released a report showing that more than 40,000 weapons, including huge guided missile launchers sent to Ukraine, cannot be accounted for. It is believed that corrupt military officials smuggled them out to be sold to terror cells in the Middle East and on the black market. This would explain why Ukraine has not made any progress on the battlefield despite receiving a total of $75 billion from the United States. Zelensky says that the problem isn't the corruption, it's that they need even more aid from the US. But the thing is, Zelensky himself has been caught stealing money in the past. A 2021 report called the Pandora Papers revealed that Zelensky has multiple offshore bank accounts hiding millions of dollars. It's unclear where exactly he got all that money from, but it's very suspicious how so many Ukrainian officials started getting extremely rich as more and more aid from the United States started to arrive.
Okay, well, let's see where, let me see, I want to play this clip right here because that this explains where Zelensky is getting the money from and where it's going. Now, you have to remember that Zelensky is an actor, right? Before he became president, he was an actor, a comedian. Now, all of a sudden, he's a billionaire now. A billionaire. What actor, comedian, better so-so, he wasn't even that good, are billionaires, right? You want to see the link here? Okay, and this is a gentleman by the name of Gonzalo Lira, and we'll get into his story in a little bit. But he's an American journalist who was reporting on Ukraine and Hunter Biden. He was reporting on the corruption and what was really going on there. And take a listen to this. This is going to tell you a lot.
Zelensky and Hunter Biden have a great deal in common, and you should be aware of it. You see, Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, well, is actually a manufactured political figure. He was manufactured by a Ukrainian-Israeli Cypriot oligarch called Igor Kolomoisky. Now, Igor Kolomoisky was the man who owns 1+1 Media here in Ukraine. And 1+1 Media is a company that financed and produced the TV show Servant of the People. And Servant of the People hired Zelensky, a well-known actor in Ukraine, an actor with zero political experience or even any political interest. Well, and Kolomoisky financed Zelensky to the point that Zelensky today is a billionaire. How many actors do you know are billionaires? And do you know who Kolomoisky also financed to the tune of $50,000 a month plus additional benefits of different sorts? Hunter Biden. Yes, in 2014, Burisma, the Ukrainian oil company, gas company, hired Hunter Biden to be on its board of directors to the tune of $50,000 a month. Who do you think controls Burisma? Kolomoisky.
Then here's the Israeli link. Kolomoisky. Okay? And that's what you have to understand. Is that you get people like this Kolomoisky guy, and they turn guys like Zelensky into nothing more than a puppet. All right. Now I want one last clip I want to play on the corruption by Rand Paul here, and then we'll get into it.
Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries on the planet, maybe second only to Russia. Corruption runs deep in Ukraine, and there's plenty of evidence that it has run rampant since Russia's invasion. As President Zelensky landed in New York earlier this week, we learned that corruption concerns in Ukraine's Ministry of Defense resulted in the firing of 6 deputy defense ministers. This comes 2 weeks after the firing of Defense Minister Oleksiy Reznikov, who was removed after it was discovered that the Ministry of Defense had mishandled military contracts. Last month, Zelensky fired all 24 regional military recruitment chiefs because they were, quote, involved in illegal activities, including enrichment. Is this fair to the American people? Millions of Americans are struggling each day to make ends meet. Millions of Americans are struggling to provide for their families and put food on the table. Can we honestly look our constituents in the eye and tell them that this is a good investment of their dollars?
Right?
Can we tell them that this is a good investment of their dollars? And we'll get into those recruitment guys in a little bit. But so there you go. That's the corruption. This is one of the most corrupt places on the planet, bar none. So with that understanding, now let's think in terms of democracy. Now, when we hear the term democracy said by our government, we know what that means. It's not the constitutional republic democracy. It's a capitalist society where they control everything, bordering on totalitarian. You know, they want full control. That's not democracy, guys. But that's what's going on in Ukraine. Okay. Article from 2022 from the Mises Institute that says Zelensky's well-documented history of crushing dissent. The following, a long-forgotten story regarding the nature of Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky's attitude towards free speech. Zelensky has been lionized by the Western press since the start of Russia's invasion. But in the not-so-distant past, many international human rights organizations and concerned Ukrainians were sounding the alarm on dangerous and anti-democratic patterns of behavior exhibited by the president. Here's what happened. The Zelensky administration believe it is possible to return Donetsk and Luhansk to Ukraine by force. Now, that's the Donbass region. Only a suicide and narrow-minded person could believe that, is what Viktor Medvedchuk, the owner of Newsom, who is criticizing the president for reneging his campaign promise to find a peaceful solution to the conflicts of eastern Ukraine. And that's what Zelensky campaigned on, peace. Okay, and he's done nothing to bring peace. And these Azov puppets have just messed with him. And he can't sign a treaty at this point. It will be his head. And they've told him that. You'll be hanging from a tree if you sign peace with Russia, is what the far right is telling him. Okay, so on February 3rd, 2021, Zelensky circumvented parliament to enact sanctions on three television stations believed to be affiliated with Medvedchuk, a leader of the opposition bloc party and duly elected member of parliament. So this is an elected official. Gee, sound familiar when they attack an elected official from a rival party? Couldn't happen in the United States, could it? And this is happening at the same time, guys. This is the whole plan that they have right now. This is what these parasites are doing. The channels were immediately taken off air, including News One. Zelensky also sanctioned the air travel company used by Medvedchuk and pressured American social media companies like YouTube and Facebook to deactivate the accounts of Medvedchuk-affiliated companies, which they ultimately did. Censorship 101. Is that democracy? Silencing your rivals and silencing media outlets? Censoring? That sounds like democracy in America, that's for sure. Justified by Medvedchuk's ties to Putin, these actions were nonetheless widely condemned by international European and Ukrainian human rights NGOs. Free press advocates like the International and European Federations of Journalists, who collectively represents hundreds of thousands of journalists across 140 countries, jointly denounced the decree, calling it an extrajudicial and politically motivated ban and a blatant attack on press freedom that must be urgently reversed. Is that democracy? A politically motivated ban and a blatant attack on the press freedom? Come on. I mean, it says government authorities sometimes participated in and condoned attacks on journalists. The report went on, citing credible allegations that the government prosecuted journalists in retaliation for their work. And we will get to Gonzalo Lira in a second. Ignoring international backlash, on August 20th, 2021, Zelensky passed broad sanctions against various digital media publishers, yet again without parliamentary involvement. So no democratic processes involved, just authoritarianism at its finest. Stranya, one of Ukraine's largest outlets at the time with 24 million visits per month, was a primary target of the sanctions. After its primary URL was cut off, the outlet was forced onto another domain, which is still forbidden in Ukraine. Okay. It's over and over again, silencing the press. Okay. Here we go. A local perspective on Zelensky's press relations is provided by a Ukrainian outlet now familiar to many Westerners, the Kiev Independent, whose Twitter following rocketed from just 11,400 followers a few weeks before the invasion to 2.2 million as it provided English speakers around the world with live war updates. Having been celebrated in Forbes earlier this year for their reports on the Russian war crimes and op-eds calling for Western sanctions against Russia, it's difficult to portray the outlet as pro-Kremlin. Before the invasion in January 2022, The Independent published a piece titled How Zelensky's Administration Moves to Dismantle Press Freedom in Ukraine. The past 4 months has seen a surge in attempts to control the media, The Independent reported. It's citing characterized by threats of criminal prosecution against media outlets and journalists. I mean, guys, that's democratic. Okay, here's an article from 2022. President Zelensky has consolidated Ukraine's TV outlets and dissolved rival political parties. That's democracy, right? Democracy in the 2020s. President Zelensky has consolidated all TV platforms in Ukraine into one state broadcast and restricted political rivals. Political opposition fears such civil liberty constraints could continue. Let's see. Is there anything worth noting in here? Yeah, this is just an interview with these guys going back and forth. But that's okay. Again, another example. That was 2022. Okay, let's go to 2023. Zelensky signs controversial law expanding government power to regulate the media. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky signed into law a controversial statute expanding the government's power to regulate media groups and journalists in the country. Zelensky signed legislation on Thursday over the objections of media unions and press freedom organizations that warn it would have a chilling effect on free speech. But we're supporting democracy, guys. This is why we're sending billions of dollars over there to silence the opposition and eliminate political rivals. Under law, under the new law, the National Television and Radio Broadcasting Council, whose members are appointed by the president's administration and by members of parliament, will have broader authority over Ukrainian media organizations and journalists. The regulatory agency can now effectively shut down news sites that aren't registered. In a statement last month, the National Union of Journalists of Ukraine said the bill posed a threat to press freedom in the country. Such powers are clearly excessive. No one has yet managed to tame freedom of speech in Ukraine. It won't work this time either. Zelensky's administration has been accused of suppressing press freedom. He first ordered the drafting of a new law to boost media regulations in 2019, the year he entered office. So as soon as he came in, he was looking to limit the press. Okay. So Ukraine will demonstrate its European commitment to promoting a free and independent media, not establishing the state control of information. It's state-controlled media, guys. That's what you get from Ukraine. Now, I spoke before. You heard about the gentleman who named Gonzalo Lira. Okay, he was investigating corruption in Ukraine, the Bidens, and Zelensky. And he was arrested. And he died in prison. Okay, so Gonzalo Lira, a Chilean-American, and he's American, by the way, American citizen, war commentator for his critical views on Zelensky's regime and the Ukraine-Russia conflict, passed away on January 11, 2024, at a hospital in Kharkiv, Ukraine. Lira's death followed an eight-month imprisonment on charges of justifying Russia's military actions in Ukraine. Did he kill anybody? Did he commit a crime? No. He was a reporter, a journalist, justifying Russia's military actions in Ukraine, which we have shown you were provoked by NATO increasingly moving on Russia's border and threatening to bring Ukraine into NATO. Okay. Says Gonzalo Lira gained notoriety in 2022 as a vocal critic of what he perceived as increasing authoritarianism in Ukraine. Lira saw the conflict as a proxy war waged by the U.S. against Russia and criticized the loss of life for a futile, unwinnable war. His arrest in May of 2023 under charges of production and dissemination of materials justifying Russia's armed aggression against Ukraine was a turning point. It not only highlighted the complexities of wartime free speech, but also catalyzed opposition movements against U.S. funding for the conflict. High-profile figures such as Elon Musk and Tucker Carlson called for his release, bringing global attention to the case. The news of Lira's deteriorating health emerged from communications between his father and the U.S. Embassy. Documents and emails revealed attempts by his father to alert the U.S. Embassy about his son's critical condition and lack of transparency from Ukrainian authorities regarding his health status. I cannot accept the way my son died. He was tortured, extorted, incommunicado for 8 months and 11 days, and the U.S. Embassy did nothing to help my son. The responsibility of this tragedy is with dictator Zelensky and the concurrence of a senile American president, Joe Biden. My pain is unbearable. The world must know what is going on in Ukraine with that inhuman dictator, Zelensky. In a poignant handwritten letter, Lira described his health ordeal, including double pneumonia, pneumothorax, and severe edema. This letter, believed to be the last written correspondence, detailed the neglect he faced in prison. Despite these alarming symptoms prior to medical attention, it was reportedly delayed until it was too late. So it says, I have had double pneumonia, both lungs, as well as pneumothorax and a very severe case of edema, swelling of the body. All this started in mid-October, but was ignored by the prison. They only admitted I had pneumonia at a December 22nd hearing. So he went over 2 months with it. I am at least about to have a procedure to reduce the edema pressure in my lungs, which is causing the extreme shortness of breath. All right. So this is bad. And, you know, they detained him for simply reporting on the war. All right, this is just it's disgusting. You know, it's so gross what's going on over there. Now, you want to know how it's even more disgusting. Okay? What is going on? And I talked about recruitment earlier. They are not allowing men to leave the country, haven't since this started. And it's a meat grinder over there. Okay, they won't give us true numbers on death totals. They will not give us true facts on battles that are going on. What's going on? You're not getting a real story. It is a meat grinder over there. They're running out of soldiers, guys. They're running out of people to feed this grinder. But yet we're told they're winning. Okay? A winning army does not do this. Fleeing Ukrainian men, all right? They were trying to flee a man captured by Ukraine. There's one example. All right, we have another one. Here's another example. This is a piece from the BBC. Ukrainian men trying to run from the war. This is stop. This is the border police on your knees.
These are guards on Ukraine's southern border with Romania. But this isn't them keeping enemies out. It's keeping their own people in. Since the Russian invasion, for any man who can fight and is under 60, it's illegal to leave the country without a valid exemption. The young men you saw in that video were arrested meters from Romania's border and could face up to 8 years in jail. Since the start of the war, over 4,000 men have been arrested while trying to cross this border. Elsewhere, the numbers are higher. This man was arrested in northern Moldova and taken to the local border police station.
He's trying to go to his wife and kids in England.
It's been 6 months since he's seen his family. He says he left Kyiv because he's struggling to survive.
Prices are rising, we need to eat. Work is scarce, he says.
With no fighting experience, he hadn't been asked to take up arms yet.
Initially, those who have served are going. The rest of us who have not served are waiting. If the situation worsens, they'll start taking everything, including the disabled. People say this is a betrayal. I disagree. Not everybody is a warrior. There's no need to keep the whole country locked up.
Ukrainian men running from the war have the right to claim asylum in neighboring countries. Yevgeny was able to claim asylum. He's one of 20,000 men granted asylum after crossing illegally to a neighboring country since the war began. We lost contact with Yevgeny after this. The BBC have found more than 40,000 people have tried to leave Ukraine or have already left illegally. Ukraine says the number of men leaving is having no effect on the war effort.
No effect on the war effort, yet we just saw them rounding up and beating people trying to flee, right? Which is it? Which is it? Please explain this to me. Okay, let's look how well the war is going in Ukraine. How well is it going?
Just received some overhead surveillance material from Ukraine, and the overhead surveillance photographs or pictures show 123,000 freshly dug graves. And the estimate at the bottom of the picture is that 400,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed thus far. To sum up the counteroffensive, it's a fairly straightforward affair. It's gone absolutely nowhere. It's achieved nothing. And I blame this to some extent on NATO and on the military advice that they've received, particularly from the Americans and the British. Ukrainians have been trying to refight. They're operating in a fundamentally different environment.
Upwards of possibly 400,000 dead, guys. 400,000. But that's not being reported. Okay, they won't let it out because he's got a grasp on the media. Is that democracy when you have 40,000 people trying to leave because they don't want to fight in this meat grinder? This war that could have been prevented multiple times? Putin wants to sign a treaty. The U.S. will not allow them to sign that treaty. Why? Why? Because it's a honeypot. These politicians and these military-industrial complex scumbags are all making money off this. What are they doing? They're giving Ukraine old weapons and then getting money to make new weapons back. They're getting kickbacks here for these deals. That's where our billions of dollars are going, in addition to the corruption that we talked about over and over again in this episode. All right? It's disgusting. And when are we going to stop this? You know, when are people going to say enough's enough? I mean, they said 60% of Americans don't want to send any more funding to Ukraine. It should be 95% of Americans. We should not be sending another dollar to this. Send them to the negotiating table, get a deal done, and stop the killing. Trump was right. Said, I want the killing to stop. That's what needs to happen. But no, these war pigs are going to keep pushing on because you have three-letter agencies in there and other people that have investments in this land, and it is nothing but a corrupt cesspool. That's all Ukraine is. Child trafficking, biolabs. You name it, it goes in there. Drugs, mafia, anti-Semitism, Nazism. It's all rampant in Ukraine. And allowed by the West.
This is who we're supporting. I don't support it. I know you guys, most of you guys don't support it. The American government is supporting this shit. And it's nonsense. It's another textbook overthrow the government, put in a puppet, and pillage and siphon everything we can out of this. And unfortunately, they're doing it at the expense of the Ukrainians. They're just letting them get slaughtered. Why? Try and poke the bear. Try and hurt Russia in the slightest. And is it working? No. The Russia economy seems to be doing pretty well. They're going with all those BRICS nations, and you see what's going on over here. Inflation's through the roof, groceries, gas, everything. You want to have work done on your house? You need to have, you know, work done on your car? Astronomical prices, guys. And this is part of it. Because that money that we've sent over there could have handled the homeless problem in America 8 times over. 8 times over, we could have solved the homeless issue in America with this. They don't want to. We know this because we saw it when Xi Jinping came to visit San Francisco earlier this year. They cleaned the streets up real quick for the communist leader's visit, made it look nice and pretty for him and presentable, but it's still lipstick on a fucking pig. Because they don't want to deal with the issues here. They just want to keep getting their pockets fatter and fatter and fatter at the expense of us, destroying, wiping out the middle class, and all in hopes of eventually ushering in their central bank digital currency, the last step in their tiptoe to tyranny, as Buckley likes to say on the Wicked Planet. If you can't see it, I'm trying to show you guys how this is taking place over and over again, and it's coordinated. It's not there. All of this stuff could be solved. They don't want to. It's all part of the plan, and this is all part of the destruction, the sunsetting of the American Empire, and this is how we do it. How did the Roman Empire? Forever wars, right? Depravity, debauchery. All of these things are taking place in America. All the while, we're just being stripped of our any chance of wealth. And funding wars and nonsense overseas. We have a huge crisis at our southern border. It's not a big deal. We're not even allowed to call these people illegals anymore. That's how crazy things have got. Our government will not even say that these people that are invading our country are illegal. They're undocumented. Now they're fucking illegal. Call a spade a spade. They came into the country illegally. There is a legal process to be followed to get into this country, and they're not following it. And it all ties in, guys, because those funds that we're sending over to Ukraine could be done. We could secure the border. We could solve homelessness. We could work on the just disgusting medical system that we have. We could improve our education system, which is also disgusting and broken, right? Our infrastructure. It's not like we don't have problems here. We have an abundance of issues in our own country. But the puppets that be, the parasites at play, are just going to keep sucking from us until we finally say enough's enough. And when is that? When are we going to finally say enough's enough? I've been saying it for 4 years now, and I've had enough of this. I'm done. Done with the nonsense. Done with the doublespeak. Done with the deflection.
When are these people going to be held accountable? And it's a rhetorical question, because never. Why would they do anything to themselves? They have all the power. They have all the money. They have all the control, the resources. They're never going to do anything against themselves. And that's why things like this happen. Why does the CIA need 12 bases in Ukraine? Why? Why were we, you know, and Trump is part of this too. Although he didn't send them the weapons right away, you saw they kept pushing that unit 2245, grew that out, kept working with the spy agencies. There's no one's hands are clean of this. This has been going on since 2014 when the United States illegally overthrew a elected government in Ukraine and instituted a puppet regime ever since. Whether it's Yatsenyuk, whether it's the elected, and I use air quotes with elected, Zelensky, it's all corruption. It's all nonsense. It's typical U.S. foreign policy bullshit. Three-letter agency intervention. Typical coup, textbook coup work by them. And deflection all along the way. Russia's the bad guy in all this, is what they're going to tell you. Up, down, side. Russia bad, right? Russia, Russia, Russia. When in reality, the United States and its three-letter agencies, along with Mossad and MI6 and the Five Eyes groups, are the biggest global terrorists around. It's that simple. And Ukraine, I don't want to hear shit about democracy anymore. There is no democracy. It is an authoritarian dictatorship run by Western puppet masters. And he's held by his own people, the far right extremists in his parties, the Nazis that have told him if he surrenders, he will be killed. Let me see if I can find that. Let's see. Zelensky threatened or treaty. Yeah. Threatened. Follow me. Okay. Yeah, I'm not seeing it here, but there was, you know, they basically, and Jimmy Dore did a great job reporting on this back when it happened. It was back in 2023, but I can't find it. But anyway, they basically told him, they said, if you sign a peace deal, we will string you up by a tree. So that's that. Guys, that's all I got for tonight. I guess, you know, the word of the night is democracy. And if you're going to support democracy, you have to really stop supporting Ukraine, because this is a joke. It's killing our constitutional republic. And it is just a disgrace. There's rampant corruption. It's a fake government that has, you know, worked its way in. NATO, totally. I mean, they're 100% guilty of poking Russia, provoking them to invade. Okay, now, is Russia justified in invading? No, I don't agree with that either. But at the same time, it is what it is. It could have been stopped. It should have been stopped. It hasn't. And on it goes. All right. So if you want to support the show, patreon.com/thegreatdeceptionpodcast, leave a review, like, share, all that fun stuff. I really appreciate all the support. And everybody, stay strong and question everything.
It's as if no one has noticed that we have no extra money to send to Ukraine. Our deficit this year will exceed $1.5 trillion. Borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine makes no sense. It's not as if we have some sort of rainy day fund sitting around trillions of dollars in a pot of money. We're just going to send that to Ukraine. We're going to borrow it. When we borrow it and create new money to pay for that borrowing, we create the inflation that is plaguing our economy.
This Republican Kentucky have exposed a lot of corruption in the government of Ukraine. Please share this video. Share this video to your friends and your followers. Let them see and know that America is corrupt and still America is poor. America don't have money anymore. They borrow money from China to support Ukraine to fight Russia. But when I heard of this, I was so shocked. How can China borrow money to the United States now? The worst threat, the worst enemy. Two of those countries are the worst enemy. These two countries have been in a big problem for a very long time now. They have been on a nuclear threat for a very long time now, these two countries. But why will the United States go and borrow money from China to support Ukraine to fight Russia? Why they fully understand that they don't have money? They have borrowed a lot of money from IMF and World Bank. They are owing IMF and World Bank over $33 trillion. More than their total GDP. America GDP is $23 trillion. They have $10 trillion debt ahead of their GDP. They are still borrowing. They are tired of the World Bank IMF. Now they are moving to country by country. Imagine for you to go to your enemy to borrow money, to sponsor Ukraine, to fight Russia. They are not even ashamed. Watch this video. Then you will fully understand what is happening. Watch this video. Share to your friends. God bless you.
Has to put the leadership of the House, the Senate, and the President of the United States on notice. I will not consent to any expedited passage of any spending bill that provides any more American aid to Ukraine. It's as if no one has noticed that we have no extra money to send to Ukraine. Our deficit this year will exceed $1.5 trillion. Borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine makes no sense. It's not as if we have some sort of rainy day fund sitting around trillions of dollars in a pot of money. We're just going to send that to Ukraine. We're going to borrow it. When we borrow it and create new money to pay for that borrowing, we create the inflation that is plaguing our economy. Since the beginning of Russia's war in Ukraine, the American taxpayers provided Ukraine with $113 billion. Over the 583 days of war, between February 24, 2022 and the end of the month, that averages $6.8 billion per month or $223 million per day. There's a lot of things that we need to fix in our country before we borrow money to try to perpetuate a war in another country.
Let me get this straight. We're borrowing money from China to then dump it in. What? Is this true?
When will the aid requests end? When will the war end? Can someone explain what victory in Ukraine looks like? President Biden certainly can't. His administration has failed to articulate a clear strategy or objective in this war, and Ukraine's long-awaited counteroffensive has failed to make meaningful gains in the East. With no clear end in sight, it looks increasingly like Ukraine will be yet another endless quagmire funded by the American taxpayer. That's why public support for the war is waning. A CNN poll from August shows that a majority of Americans now oppose Congress authorizing additional funding to Ukraine. And now there are those in the Senate who would refuse to listen to these voices, voices coming from a war-weary nation, and who would hold the federal government hostage by inserting $24 billion more for Ukraine. They're talking about saying the only way government stays open, the only way we avoid a shutdown is by shoveling more American taxpayer dollars to Ukraine. They're going to link keeping the government open with more money to Ukraine, and I'm here to say that I'm not going to agree to it, and I will not let them shut down the government simply because they want to send more of your hard-earned tax dollars to Ukraine. Either the American people fund an endless war in Ukraine, or the Uniparty threatens to shut down the government. This is a clear dereliction of duty, and I will not stand for it. Colleagues, as representatives of the American people, you should not stand for it either. The bill that comes for us should be about funding our government, not somebody else's government. I will not give consent to a bill that includes funding for Ukraine in keeping our government open. As elected officials, we have an obligation to pursue a foreign policy that advances the security and prosperity of our country. Funneling billions of dollars that have to be borrowed into the meat grinder of eastern Ukraine does neither. The longer this conflict continues, the greater the risk that miscalculation or purposeful escalation draws the United States into direct conflict with Russia. Russia's military may have a bloody nose, but Moscow still maintains the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. Let's not pretend that the U.S. involvement in this war comes without risks. If that's not bad enough, we lack effective oversight mechanisms to ensure that the hard-earned American tax dollars don't fall prey to waste, fraud, and abuse. For over a year now, I have been asking for a special inspector general to make sure they're not stealing our money. We've had one in Afghanistan, and he has, and his team of economists and technicians have overseen and found billions of dollars worth of waste that they've saved. We need the same thing in Ukraine, a special inspector general to make sure they're not stealing our money.
So we don't have one of those. We don't even know if the money is real. We don't even know as American citizens, taxpayers, we don't even know exactly where the money is even going, if it's going to exactly where they say it's going. We don't even have an auditor, but we got the IRS all over the place in the United States going after people with more than $600 in their bank account, huh? That's wild.
When that has come before a vote in the Senate, the majority party in here says, no, we just want to spend the money. We don't care. Some Republicans have gone along with this as well, and they have voted against an inspector general. It is a terrible abuse of our spending authority to spend money overseas in a war and not make sure that they're not stealing it. So in addition to the colossal cost of the war, we end up paying a corruption tax. Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries on the planet, maybe second only to Russia. Corruption runs deep in Ukraine, and there's plenty of evidence that it has run rampant since Russia's invasion. As President Zelensky landed in New York earlier this week, we learned that corruption concerns in Ukraine's Ministry of Defense resulted in the firing of 6 deputy defense ministers. This comes 2 weeks after the firing of Defense Minister Oleksiy Reznikov, who was removed after it was discovered that the Ministry of Defense had mishandled military contracts. Last month, Zelensky fired all 24 regional military recruitment chiefs because they were, quote, involved in illegal activities, including enrichment. Last October, we learned that U.S. shipment of grenade launchers, machine guns, rifles, bulletproof vests, and thousands of rounds of ammunition were ending up in the hands of criminal gangs and weapons traffickers posing as humanitarian organizations. And what did the Senate do? They voted against a special inspector general to make sure they're not stealing our money. What are we doing? Is this fair to the American people? Millions of Americans are struggling each day to make ends meet. Millions of Americans are struggling to provide for their families and put food on the table. Can we honestly look our constituents in the eye and tell them that this is a good investment of their dollars? Some say the war in Ukraine is a fight to save democracy.